You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Yeah, I am a scientist. Yeah, I am a scientist. Yeah, I am a scientist. We gotta live on science alone.
Welcome to Unbiased Science, where we bring scientific method to the madness. We're your hosts, Dr. Jessica Steyer.
And Dr. Andrea Love.
And today, we are going to answer the question, how do tattoos work? Before we get into that, let's just briefly recap what we talked about last week. So in honor of Mental Health Month, we spent some time talking about pandemic-induced anxiety, the different types of anxieties that many of us are experiencing, and some ways to combat that anxiety and when to seek help. Andrea, did you want to add anything?
I think that's a great, you know, one sentence summary. You know, I mean, obviously mental health, mental illness is very complex. There are a variety of different types of mental health disorders, and we're going to ideally talk about some of those in the future. But as, you know, we're nearing this kind of reentry phase of the pandemic, a lot of people have increased anxiety with the new mask guidance from the CDC and, you know, how to behave normally if you have young children that can't be vaccinated and all these sorts of things that complicate the matter.
Right. So, my voice. Right. So you guys should know that I'm just getting over a cold. So I have I'm almost past the laryngitis. But if my voice sounds a little strange, that's why. But anyhow. All right, Andrea, let's talk a little bit about tattoos. Right. So I know you have some tattoos. Do you want to tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. So I have four tattoos currently. The first two I actually got on the same day on my 18th birthday when I was legally allowed to sign off on my own, you know, getting tattoos. I got my third one after my brother passed away in 2015. It's a tribute to him. And my fourth tattoo was a design that I had been working on for probably almost 10 years. It was a running themed tattoo, but I actually decided to not get it tattooed when I ended up with a very severe foot injury that ultimately needed surgery when I was in graduate school. And I told myself I wasn't a runner anymore because I couldn't physically run, and that the next marathon that I was able to complete after my foot surgery, I would get it done. And so I got that done in 2017. After my official return to running.
That's so cool. I knew about your tattoos, but I didn't know the story, the meaning behind all of them. That's really interesting. So I have always kind of been obsessed with tattoos, but so I'm Jewish. My family is not religious, but we are definitely culturally Jewish. And for those who don't know, you're not supposed to get tattoos if you're Jewish. You cannot be buried in a Jewish cemetery. It's something about leaving the world the way you entered it. Something, oh my gosh, if you're Jewish and listening to this and I just butchered that, I'm sorry. But that's how it has been put into my brain. But anyway, so, and then to add to that, not to get too deep or morbid here, but my family was in the Holocaust. And so, you know, obviously the Nazis were tattooing the Jewish prisoners in the concentration camps. And so tattoos have just always been like a non-starter in my family. I always wanted to get one. And just out of respect for my family's wishes, I didn't. But, and so at one point when I don't even know how old I was, 18, 19, I got my nose pierced, and that was kind of my way of doing something kind of cool and what I thought was taboo. But no tattoos for me.
Well, it's so funny you say that. So, you know, my partner, Josh, is also Jewish, and his family were also in concentration camps, and they fled during the Holocaust, and he's wanted a tattoo for many, many years. He's had the design ready to go. He knows exactly where he wants it. And I've had two other designs for myself that I've been kind of holding off on getting because I was like, oh, we can go get them together. And he hasn't, you know, committed to it fully for a lot of those same reasons that you mentioned.
Jewish guilt.
Yes.
Jewish guilt.
Exactly.
And Jewish boys and their mamas, uh-uh. His mama frowns upon it. No way he's getting it. Okay, so let's talk about tattoos. What is a tattoo, right? Mm. A tattoo is a permanent mark or design made on your skin with pigments inserted through pricks into the skin's top layer. Typically, the tattoo artist uses a handheld machine that acts like a sewing machine, kind of, with one or more needles piercing the skin repeatedly. And with every puncture, the needles insert tiny ink droplets. That doesn't sound pleasant, Andrea.
So I will say the tattoo gun moves very, very quickly. I've seen these videos of, like, it very slow motion. Maybe we'll post one on social media. It's really fascinating. But yeah, I mean, it feels like a lot of repetitive stings. And some of the needles have a single needle for, like, fine line work, and some use, like, 3, 5, 7, even 9 needles, depending on the type of pattern and the type of design and the size of the design that's being done.
And there, typically, it's done without anesthetics, right? And it can cause a small amount of bleeding and can be, as we're talking about, you know, slightly or potentially very painful.
Yeah, I mean, certain places of the body are certainly less comfortable. I mean, you know, there's a whole chart of, like, where a tattoo is going to hurt more. My most recent piece is a rib piece. So it's it goes from my upper rib cage all the way down to my hip bone. It's probably about, I don't know, 1.5 feet long and probably 5 inches wide. And there's some feathering and there's some fine line work. And that took about 5.5 hours. And, you know, by the end, you are very tender. You're getting stabbed thousands of times with these tiny needles. And there's very obvious swelling and bleeding as well. And you know, so there's definitely a little bit like a pain is pleasure type phenomenon in the tattoo world.
Oh, interesting. So let's talk about how popular they are. I as far as I know, tattoos are actually more popular than ever. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think the most recent surveys, there was a 2019 poll done by Ipsos. They found that 30% of Americans had at least one tattoo, and that's actually increased from 21% back in 2012. And if you look at demographic breakdowns, those under 55 years old are twice as likely to have at least one tattoo compared to those over 55. If you look at breaking that down further, 40% of individuals aged 18 to 34 and 36% of those that are 35 to 54 have at least one tattoo. And then only 16% of those 55 and older have at least one tattoo. What's interesting is that those without a college degree are only slightly more likely to have a tattoo than those with a college degree. I'm not sure exactly why they broke that down demographically, but it was 33% versus 27%. But, you know, kind of roughly speaking, in our modern era, you know, it tends to slant toward a more younger generation, you know, where people are generally getting more than one tattoo. And it's funny, my half-brother, my youngest half-brother, he just turned 21. And within the last year, he's gotten, I think, 3 tattoos. He has a friend whose girlfriend is a tattooing apprentice. And he's been offering his body up as a practice canvas, essentially.
No way. Yeah. Oh, that's wild.
I mean, the tattoos look great. He actually got the same symbol that I have on my arm for our brother Brian recently on his chest. But he got like a pink panther on his ankle that kind of peeks over his basketball socks. And like they're well done, but you know, he gets a discount because apprentices are training to be professional tattoo artists.
That's kind of like when I had dental work in college, I would only have it done by the dental students because it was
you could afford it. I know.
Exactly. All right. So the reasons why people get tattoos are vast, right? So it could be self-expression, artistic freedom, rebellion. You know, Andrea, you have some very personal reasons for getting a tattoo to honor your brother, Brian. It could be a visual display of a personal narrative. And there are lots of spiritual and cultural traditions around tattooing. We'll talk about some of those in a minute. But yeah, some can be, Andrea, I see you put some notes notes here, I see sexual motivation. Maybe you could help explain what that means.
You know, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about tattoo removal at the end, but we know, you know, some people are getting tattoos to elicit a certain reaction from, you know, the people they're trying to attract. And even, you know, you have some that are, you know, an ode to your loved one, right? We know that people get their partner's name tattooed or, you know, some sort of symbol. And also there happens to be a lot of drunken impulsiveness with regard to tattoos. There are reasons that tattoo parlors or tattoo studios are very often open late into the night.
I was going to say during my, what is it called? Right after we got married, it was not real. We didn't really do a honeymoon, but we basically just took a bunch of our friends down to Key West and all of the tattoo and piercing shops were open all hours of the night. And a lot of decisions were almost made.
Yes.
But okay, so the history of tattoos dates back at least 7,000 years. Earliest evidence of tattoos dates to 5,000 BCE. And tattooing was once ubiquitous, right? Even Charles Darwin observed that there's no place in the world that didn't practice tattooing.
And this was, you know, in the 1800s, you know, when he was writing The Descent of Man, he was traveling the world. He was doing a lot of his biological cataloging of species, and he made these observations that cultures around the planet were tattooing. You know, it's not something novel that's stigmatized in modern culture. These are things that have happened for thousands of years.
Right. So in terms of tattoos on actual bodies, the earliest known examples were for a long time Egyptian and were present specifically on female mummies dated to 2000 BCE. But following the more recent discovery of the Iceman from the area of the Italian-Australian border in 1991 and his tattoo patterns, you know, this date has been pushed back at least 1,000 years because he was carbon dated at around 5,200 years old.
Isn't that wild that we can not only find, you know, human remains that long ago, but that there's still evidence of them having tattoos, you know, in and on their skin. And I think what's really interesting about the history of tattoos here is that if you look at anthropological and ethnographic evidence, the data suggests that tattooing and body scarring, these all evolved independently across all these different regions. It wasn't like all of these people converged and, you know, discovered this together. It's these numerous cultures that all developed this completely independently.
For sure. And the reasons for tattooing are so interesting. So just going back to Egyptian times, this is a quote from, I believe, Vassar did some research around tattoos across cultures that we'll link on our website. But they said that the distribution of the tattoo dots and small crosses on the lower spine and right knee and ankle joints correspond to areas of strain-induced degeneration, which suggests that the tattoos may have actually been used to alleviate joint pain and were actually considered to be therapeutic. And so these archaeological studies have shown that ancient Egyptian tattooing was primarily practiced reserved for women. And so they think that tattooing was used, quote, during the very difficult time of pregnancy and birth, which is supported by the pattern of distribution largely around the abdomen, on top of the thighs and the breasts. And it's believed that older Egyptian women would pass this tradition of tattooing down to their younger counterparts.
It's so interesting. I wonder if it's something like a ceremonial activity that's conducted, or if it's more of almost like a distraction, right? If someone's being tattooed, then they'll be less in tune to the pain of childbirth. We can't pick their brains, but I wonder what the underlying motivation was.
I know. So cool.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
And just one other note about history. So across the indigenous world, we know that in the past and even now, tribal peoples rarely describe tattooing as an artistic or aesthetic practice because there are actually no terms for art or artist in the majority of indigenous languages. Instead, tattooing is just integrated into the social fabric of community and religious and cultural life. It's a cultural, clan, or family mandated, in some situations, ritual that anchors societal values on the skin for all to see. So it's, you know, by tattooing your skin, it's this source of pride. And they often, what's being tattooed typically reenacts ancestral or mythological traditions. So there are images of God, ancestors, spirits. It's really, you know, these are symbols of protection, tribal unity, and genealogy.
Yeah, and Jess, you know, I mean, we know that this still persists to the present day. We know that there are many indigenous, you know, civilizations around the world that still implement this routine tattooing as part of their, you know, induction into a community or, you know, ascension into adulthood or whatever the case happens
right.
to be.
So, Andrea, can you talk to us a little bit about the science of modern tattoos?
Yeah, sure. It's pretty cool, I think. And actually, you know, we've learned a lot about how tattoos are permanent in the last 5 years, I would say. You know, as far as we have this long history of tattoos throughout human civilization, a lot of the mechanism for why they last forever wasn't really known. So as Jess mentioned in the very beginning, modern tattoos are applied typically with these motorized handheld needle apparatuses. Now, there are certain tattoo artists that use more traditional single or manual needles and things like that. Those are really kind of niche artist communities. So if you're going to a tattoo shop, you're going to typically be encountering these motorized apparatuses. And so these machines, as Jess was mentioning, they work kind of similarly to a sewing machine where they have multiple single or multiple needles that pierce the skin to inject that ink. And that's very, very fast. It's up to 3,000 needle pricks a minute. And so, you know, when you hear it, it just sounds like a buzzing. If you actually looked at it when they're applying a tattoo to you, you probably wouldn't be able to see the individual needles moving. But again, you know, you see the ink being deposited. And so the way these tattoo needles work is they wound our skin, right? They're piercing our skin and then they're injecting that ink. And so the tattoo process injects ink into a specific layer of our skin called the dermis. Now, the very top layer of the skin is called the epidermis, and it's really important that the needle pricks actually deposit the ink into the dermis, which is underneath the epidermis, because the epidermis is constantly shedding. So if you actually tattooed the epidermis, the tattoo itself wouldn't last. It would fade and it would disappear in a few weeks. And so the epidermis is that outer layer of skin that, you know, if you get a sunburn and it peels off and then you lose your tan, that sort of thing, that's what's constantly recycling. But just underneath that layer, you have the layer called the dermis. This is a bit thicker layer. It's more protected and it doesn't recycle that quickly. But this interesting detail is actually why tattoos on certain places of the body, like the tops of the hands or the tops of the feet, often are cautioned against, because you don't have quite as thick a layer of dermis in those areas of your body. And so sometimes the tattoo doesn't take or it fades more quickly. So the dermis layer of your skin has blood vessels, it has lymph vessels, it has nerves, and it has all sorts of other structures, including several key types of cells that are going going to be important in terms of why the tattoo lasts. So when the tattoo needles wound our skin, that actually triggers our immune system. And so our immune system is constantly responding to all sorts of disturbances in our bodies or insults or wounds. And so the immune system is involved in all wound healing processes, whether it be a cut, whether it be a pathogen that invades our body, or even in the case of a tattoo, whether it is the tattoo. So once that ink and once those tattoo needles penetrate the dermis, that's going to sound the alarm to these immune cells that are in our skin. And there are some particular types of immune cells that are important in this. And these are going to be types of our immune cells called the innate immune cells. So these innate immune cells are our first responders. So the innate immune system is our general, non-specific, first responder, kind of ready-to-go branch of the immune system. And so the innate immune system is filled with different cell types, including cells called dendritic cells and macrophages and a variety of other cell types. But what they do is they recognize damage or invaders in our body in a non-specific manner. So in the case of the tattoo process, they recognize the release of what we call damage-associated molecular patterns, or we call them DAMPs. And these are signals from cells in our body that say, hey, I've encountered an injury. And so these could be fragments of the cells themselves. They could be proteins. They could be chemicals. But basically, these innate immune cells sense the release of these. They also sense the presence of the ink, because the ink itself is technically a foreign invader. It's a non-human substance. And so these innate immune cells start to sound the alarm. And you have these cells that live in our skin all the time. There's a particular cell type called dermal macrophages, and these are macrophages that live in the dermis. And macrophages just mean big eaters. So these are innate immune cells that survey our body all the time, and they eat things through a process called phagocytosis, which means eating, and they engulf foreign objects and they destroy them. And they do this for pathogens. So they do this when they encounter foreign bacteria or viruses or parasites. But they also do this when they encounter these release of these DAMPs, these damage-associated signals from other cells in our body. And they also do it for things like ink particles. So we're in the skin. The needles have penetrated the skin. They've wounded cells in the skin. They've also injected these ink. So now these macrophages are basically sounding the alarm. And so what they do is they are trying to clean up the debris, where they're trying to clean up the tattoo ink. So what they do is they start to engulf the tattoo ink. And these macrophages, at the same time, they start producing all of these chemicals that are known as cytokines that activate other cells. So what they do is they also recruit new macrophages. And macrophages arise from a precursor cell type called monocytes. And monocytes are normally circulating in our blood system or our lymph vessels. But once they're called to action in the skin into the dermis, they turn into or differentiate into macrophages, and then they stay in the tissue. So the macrophages are eating the ink, they're producing inflammatory chemicals, and then they're trying to engulf and destroy the ink because they're sensing it as a foreign invader.
Okay, I'm dying right now. I'm sorry. People are probably have their jaws on the floor, because I don't think that anyone who's gotten a tattoo realizes that this is such an involved, it's actually an immune reaction.
Exactly.
That they're starting. And so what I think you're building toward, and I can't wait to hear, is, you know, how does it become so permanent? Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about this immune reaction, like, how is it that tattoos, that the ink is permanently visible in our skin? And now I'll shut up so you can continue.
No, I mean, it's so fascinating, you know, and I think it really underscores the fact that, you know, everything in our body, everything that we do to our body, everything that occurs in our body is really linked to the immune system in some way or another, even getting a tattoo done. But yeah, so this part is really interesting because normally, you know, macrophages, when they eat bacteria, when they eat a virus, they destroy it, right? And it's gone. They degrade it and they digest it. And the bacteria, the virus, is no longer able to spread in our body and to cause illness. But when they're taking up ink, the ink stays, right? These tattoos don't disappear. And part of that is underlying principles of the ink itself. So when these macrophages eat the ink particles, the macrophages are actually incapable of digesting the ink. And normally the process that a macrophage engages in order to digest the bacteria or digest the virus is once they phagocytose this molecule, this particle or this bacterium, they're able to increase the acidity of their cells. So there's a compartment inside the macrophage called the endolysosome, and it becomes very acidified when a macrophage eats something. So there's a signal involved once it takes something up that it knows that it's supposed to lower the pH of that compartment, and that acidification actually disintegrates whatever it absorbed, right? But the ink isn't resistant to that. So once they take the ink up, acidifying that compartment in the cell doesn't degrade the ink. So the ink basically stays inside the macrophage. Now, some of the macrophages will actually leave the site of the tattoo, and that's actually why during the healing process, sometimes the tattoo will fade a little bit. But most of those macrophages actually stay in the skin in that site of the tattoo. And the enzymes and the mechanisms that the macrophage have normally to digest other things, other foreign objects, they can't digest the ink with. And so the tattoo is now trapped in the skin, in the dermis. And the other interesting thing is we know cells don't live forever, right? We know, especially in certain parts of our body, the cells turn over, meaning they regenerate. So the old cells die and new cells come. That same thing is true for macrophages. They don't become immortal and they just stay there forever. But the tattoo is permanent. So what's going on there? So a study in 2018 in the Journal of Experimental Medicine actually wanted to answer this question. And so they created a model where they tattooed mouse tails and they looked at how the cells kind of recycled the tattoo ink. And I'm not going to get into the details of that. But basically what they found is that when those macrophages that had previously eaten the ink but weren't able to digest it die, they of course release that ink particle, right? Because the cell deteriorates. And then a new macrophage comes in and it tries to eat the ink again. But again, it tries to digest it. It can't digest it. So now that new macrophage is trapped there in the skin with the ink particle. And so this leads to this cycle of what we call capture, release, and recapture of those ink particles. And this pretty much occurs indefinitely. Now, there's another cell type in the dermis as well called fibroblasts, and these also take up some of the ink too. Fibroblasts are specialized cells in the dermis that make up the connective tissue, the bulk of the dermal tissue. They don't take up quite as much ink as the macrophages, but they also help to ensure kind of the permanence of the tattoo.
This is wild. So we see a tattoo as permanent, but as you're describing it, it's this sort of indefinite dynamic process.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you think of it as very static, but underneath the skin, literally in the skin, it's very dynamic. So you have this kind of cycle of cell death, release of ink particles, you know, eating of new ink particles, you know, and trapping and so on and so forth.
So that maybe has some implications for tattoo removal.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
For sure. And if anybody has ever considered or tried to get a tattoo removed, we know that you would know that it's very challenging to do. Far more difficult than to get the tattoo done in the first place. But you know, just as rates of tattoos are increasing, so are rates of tattoo removal. And depending on the size and the location and the actual image of a tattoo, between 8 to 35% of people with at least one tattoo will regret it.
Those drunken tattoos of your, you know, your girlfriend's name, and then you break up a week later and you want to get it removed. So can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, the tattoo removal process?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, as just mentioned, obviously, impulsive tattoos are more likely to be regretted than others. If you are considering a tattoo, you know, for me, for example, you know, one of mine I've been working on for over a decade. So I knew that one wasn't going to be regretted once I got it done. But for tattoo removal, there are FDA-authorized laser devices that are used. And I want to just start with the caveat that you want to consult a board-certified dermatologist. And don't try to use any at-home advertised removal products. Those are not going to help you, and they very likely could hurt you. But the typical method for tattoo removal is what we call laser removal. So it uses a particular type of laser called a Q-switch laser. And these emit very, very high energy light, which actually basically break up the ink particle pigment pieces into very, very small pieces, which then the macrophages can digest and clear out of your body. Now, it's interesting because we're talking about a laser, which is a light beam. And so we know we have all these different colors of ink. So black ink is actually the easiest to remove because it absorbs all of the wavelengths of light, whereas colored ink is more challenging because it has to be the corresponding wavelength that could break up those pigments. But these ink particles have to be superheated. It causes the ink particle to expand, and then it basically cools super quickly to basically rip the ink particle apart. And this process is called photothermolysis. And this is the same sort of process that's used in laser hair removal. So it's this kind of super heating, super cooling, you know, rapid process that takes place kind of under the skin.
And tattoo removal is not, it's not like you go once, right? You know, it typically takes multiple sessions, and it's not always 100%. Right?
Exactly.
It can lead to scarring and swelling, changes in skin color. And I know it's also, well, I don't know, but I've heard it's also quite painful, and actually more painful than the original tattoo.
Yeah. You know, I haven't had a tattoo removed, but I've had, you know, several done, but I've heard that as well. And what's interesting is, you know, because it does take multiple sessions, because, you know, you can't just kill the macrophages, right, in your body. They're part of your immune system. Like, you can't, you know, and that's why you have to target the ink particles themselves. But because these macrophages are so resilient that once one dies and spits out an ink particle, the next one could take it up. That's why it's so challenging to remove them. And that's why very often it's not a complete removal. And of course, the bigger the tattoo, the more sessions, the longer the sessions, and all of that sort of thing. Now, there are some instances where tattoos are surgically removed, and this would be where you would actually cut out the whole kind of layer of dermis in a region of a tattoo. That's done much less often, but it is another method that takes place occasionally. And dermabrasion, which is, I'm gonna use the analogy of basically sandpapering your dermis. And this is much, much less commonly used. It has lower success rate and has much longer healing time. But yeah, ultimately, you know, tattoos are much more easily applied than removed. So of course, always think about them before you make that decision, because those macrophages are going to make sure that it's permanent.
So can we go on to talk about some of the risks of tattoos, or did you have anything else to add there, Andrea?
I think the only last thing is that, you know, we know now that the immune system is so heavily involved in the permanence of tattoos and how tattoos work, is that something that 2018 JEM paper postulated is that there may be a way to utilize that knowledge to actually make more effective removal methods in the future. Something that is more effective, is less painful, is more permanent, and ultimately utilizing our immune system to our advantage.
How cool is that? I mean, that makes sense to me. Obviously, I'm not the one who's coming up with these, methods, but that makes total sense.
I think the challenge there is finding funding to kind of, move that type of research forward. But, you know, we're seeing what we call immunotherapies being utilized for all sorts of, bodily functions, disease states. So certainly it stands to reason that this could be an area of research in the future.
So let's talk. Here I am. I'm going to be a Debbie Downer right now. But obviously there are some risks of tattoos, because obviously we're talking about needles breaching the skin, which means that skin infections and other complications are possible. So people can have allergic reactions. So obviously, we're using tattoo dyes. Mm-hmm. So especially red, green, yellow, and blue dyes can cause allergic skin reactions, itchy rash at the tattoo site, which can occur even years after you get your tattoo. Of course, you could also get skin infections. Again, we're talking about, breaching the skin. So a skin infection is, of course, possible after tattooing if bacteria get inside. There are also other skin problems. So we could have inflammation called a granuloma, which can form around tattoo ink. And tattoo ink can also lead to keloids, which are raised areas caused by an overgrowth of scar tissue. Now, it's very important that you go to a place that's using clean equipment, because if the equipment is contaminated with infected blood, if they're not cleaning their instruments properly, you can, of course, contract various bloodborne diseases, including MRSA, Hep B, and Hep C, which can be very serious.
Absolutely.
And rarely, tattoos or permanent makeup might cause swelling or burning during, if you're getting an MRI exam. And so in some cases, tattoo pigments can also interfere with the quality of the medical image. So I thought that was interesting. I actually didn't know about that. But actually, I'm trying to think back. I had an MRI done recently. Do they ask? Do you know this? Do they ask if you have tattoos?
I just had one in May. I don't.
We're a mess.
I know. I don't remember. I mean, of course, they ask about piercings and they make you take out your piercings. And of course, that makes sense because it's a giant magnet. I don't think they asked about tattoos, but I think it's also important to know that, tattoo inks are made up of a lot of different things. And because there really isn't regulation, I think we're going to touch on that in just a minute. There may be some inks out there that use metals that could, in theory, interfere with an MRI. Now, that's why it's always important to do your due diligence about the tattoo shop that you're going to. You want to make sure, like where I go, it's all single-use only equipment, right? Single-use needles and single-use inks. And so they're, that eliminates that risk of those bloodborne contamination issues. But, it's always important to keep in mind, all of the kind of health certifications and safety practices that the place you're going to is implementing.
All right. So you just mentioned regulation. Let's talk a little bit about this. Yeah. So the FDA considers the inks used in intradermal tattoos, including permanent makeup, to be cosmetics. So when the FDA identifies any kind of a safety problem associated with a cosmetic, which, again, this includes tattoo ink, they investigate, they take action to prevent illness or injury. So the pigments used in the inks are color additives, and those are subject to pre-market approval under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. However, because of other competing public health priorities and a previous lack of evidence of safety problems associated with these pigments, the FDA traditionally has not exercised any regulatory authority for color additives on the pigments used in tattoo inks. Mm-hmm. So usually the actual practice of tattooing is regulated by local jurisdictions.
Right. So you want to, when you go to a tattoo shop, you want to make sure that your state has essentially certified or accredited that particular shop as, being adhering to the local mandates. But Jess, I find this very interesting because essentially these inks are being injected into our bodies and being there permanently, not degrading, staying in our skin, and are actually not tested for safety or efficacy. And yet 30% of the population have that done.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, you know we're going to talk about this in just a minute,
let's
just talk briefly about some reports of adverse reactions. So in 2003 and 2004, the FDA became aware of more than 150 reports of adverse reactions due to certain permanent makeup ink shades. And actually, the number of people affected is actually far higher. This is just what was reported. And so the inks associated with the outbreak were voluntarily recalled. Then again, in the spring of 2012, there were reports of infections from contaminated inks, which resulted in their recall and market withdrawal. And then more recently, in 2017, a firm voluntarily recalled several colors and sizes of tattoo inks due to microbial contamination identified by an FDA survey.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds, you know, like there is a little bit of oversight, but certainly these issues are after the fact, right? These are things where people are presumably getting tattooed, developing infections, then they're going back surveying these ink stocks, realizing that they're contaminated from the source, and then ultimately have to kind of, you know, put out the fire as a result.
Right. And, you know, I think the scientific community has raised concerns around these pigments that are used in tattoo inks. And so the FDA is investigating their safety. But exactly as you just said, I mean, these really aren't well evaluated for safety. And yet so many people continue to get them. So right now there are more than 50 different pigments and shades in use, and the list continues to grow. And although a number of color additives are approved for use in cosmetics, none are approved for injection into the skin. And using an unapproved color additive in tattoo ink makes the ink adulterated, or, you know, it reduces its quality significantly. And many pigments used in tattoo inks are not approved for skin contact at all. I was shocked to read that some are actually industrial grade colors that are really intended for printer's ink or automobile paint.
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, it really underscores the need for more oversight, particularly as more and more people are getting tattoos.
Right.
You know, I mean, obviously I have many tattoos. All of mine are black. I don't use a lot of the different, I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I just have black tattoos, but yeah, I mean, it's something to keep in mind. And, you know, there are locations on the body that are non-traditional that people are getting tattooed. I saw a new thing where people are getting the whites of their eyes tattooed, where they actually inject the pigment into the ocular fluid, which I can't. And there have been several serious consequences as a result.
I mean,
that's just a terrible idea to begin with.
Right.
Skin is one thing, eyeball, whole nother ball game.
I am horrified right now. So, Andrew, we have to talk about, you know, obviously bringing it back to vaccines, mm-hmm. you know, our favorite topic. The number one thing that we hear, you know, in response to, or people's hesitation for the COVID-19 vaccines is they're not FDA approved. Mm-hmm. So can we talk a little bit about that? There's some cognitive dissonance going on there, because there are so many people who have tattoos. And as we just discussed, the lack of regulation and lack of safety studies and approval, you know, yet these people are okay with getting these tattoos, yet they're opposing vaccines on you know, on this basis.
Yeah, and you know, this is a particularly interesting comparison, because this is almost apples to apples, right? There, it's injecting versus injecting, right? And this is intradermal, you know, into the dermis versus intramuscular. So it's a slightly different tissue when you look at a tattoo versus a vaccine. But first, vaccine ingredients, as we've posted about, are gone from the body within days, whereas tattoo ink is permanent and actually utilizes the immune system to ensure that permanence. But on top of that, the biggest difference is that vaccines are rigorously tested for both safety and efficacy, whereas there's really no efficacy for tattoos because people are just doing this for an expression, but they're not tested for safety, you know, and there's not a lot of regulation about different inks. Different tattoo shops use different brands of ink, different formulations of ink, and there's very little oversight with regard to, you know, what you're injecting into your body.
It's so true. I mean, the amount of research and monitoring and surveillance and safety data and everything that we have on these vaccines, it's just so funny to me. And the fact that they actually do have the pandemic equivalent of FDA approval, right? Emergency use authorization. And the fact that we know that FDA approval is just around the corner now that we have the 6 months of data needed for it. Yet still, you know, people are using this as an excuse. I don't know what it is about vaccines that I don't. It's like people just, I don't know.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It's a very interesting phenomenon, and I think it warrants maybe a psychological component discussion on this, you know, in particular this cognitive dissonance between, say, tattoos and vaccines, maybe on a future episode.
For sure. All right. So I think today we covered a lot of ground about tattoos, right? We talked about the history, some of the cultural reasons that people get tattooed, and all the other reasons that people might choose to get a tattoo. And Andrea, you really gave us a really, no, really, it was so fascinating to learn about how involved the immune system is in the tattoo process, and how, while, you know, to us it seems that the ink is stagnant, right? And it's this permanent thing that we have in our bodies. It's actually this dynamic, ongoing process that's occurring in our bodies indefinitely. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about the risks. We talked about the regulation or lack thereof. So I think we covered a lot of ground. Do you have anything to add before you take us home?
I think the one last thing I want to emphasize is that when you do get a tattoo, you have to remember that this is a wound on your body. And as such, your immune system, in addition to being involved in the permanence of the tattoo, the immune system is involved in the healing of the tattoo. So just like you would after a vaccine or when you're ill, you want to make sure that you rest, that you hydrate, that you follow all those after tattoo care instructions, because your immune system is taking on a heavy task, particularly with a large tattoo, to ensure that you can heal. And that's very often why many people just after tattooing experience low-grade fever, they experience lethargy and fatigue, because it really is. You're mounting an immune response. You're doing this wound healing process that ultimately will lead to the scabbing and the healing and the permanence of that tattoo.
So cool. All right, Andrea, take us home.
All right. Thanks for joining us today. We hoped you learned a thing or two and have a newfound appreciation for the immune system. And if you like our pod, please share with your friends and family and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Please also check out our website at www.unbiasedscipod.com. You can find all of our show notes and links to the studies we refer to, as well as picking up yourself some Unbiased Science merch. Next week, in honor of World No Tobacco Day, we are going to focus on e-cigarettes in particular. We're going to discuss their very known risks, but also their potential benefits, particularly those for career smokers. We will continue to provide updates on COVID-19 on our social media accounts, so be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Unbiased SciPod. Catch you next time on the pod, your trusted source for no nonsense, just science.